welcome to the FT Advisor podcast. Each week, we'll be joined by guests from the financial services world to discuss the most pressing industry issues. I'm Amy Austin, news editor at FT Advisor, and today I will be discussing the Chancellor's Mansion House reforms and various other pension changes with Mark Ormston, Director of Propositions and Corporate Partnerships at Retirement Line, and Tim Orton, Chief Investment Officer at Aegon. So welcome to you both, and thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, Amy.
So in his Mansion House speech earlier this month, the Chancellor, Jeremy Hunt, said some of the UK's largest defined contribution pension schemes had agreed to commit 5% of their default funds to unlisted equities by 2030. So this group kind of represents around, I think he's saying, like two-thirds of the UK's DC pensions market, and that this agreement could then amass up to about £50 billion in investment into high-growth companies if the rest of the market follows. At the moment, they currently invest less than 1% in unlisted companies. And the kind of aim was to enable the UK's financial services sector to increase returns for pensioners, improve outcomes for investors, and unlock capital for UK growth businesses. So, Tim, maybe I thought we could start with you, because I know that Aegon has committed, and I think was one of the first providers to commit to the Mansion House Compact Agreement. So what kind of made Aegon do this, and what did you think of the reforms?
Yeah, so thanks, Amy, and thanks for inviting me along to discuss this. We were looking at private markets anyway, and have been doing so for a little while. We are bought into the potential diversification benefits when we're looking at optimizing risk and return for our pension scheme members. There are opportunities that are not available in stock markets from emerging industries and businesses that could potentially enhance returns. And also there's a broader diversification angle as well to think about. In a lot of the markets these days, they tend to move together. So you can actually potentially create a bit more diversification in portfolio with some access to those sorts of wider investment types. So lots of reasons for us to be thinking about this. Net zero is another one. We are committed to net zero in our portfolios, and some of those off-market opportunities are the sorts of things we think we'll need to think about in achieving that over the medium term. So fantastic to be doing something that is supporting wider economic benefit and wider economic growth, and want to participate in that as well. But really the core of this is around best member outcomes. And so the initiative is congruent with that from our perspective.
And do you think, you know, there is quite a few names signed up at the moment as well, but do you think, you know, a lot of DC pension schemes will jump on board with this? Like, do you think quite a lot of the market will actually follow through and do this?
Yeah, I mean, as you said, I think it was around about two-thirds by weight of assets, typically the larger players like Aegon. But what we identified is when there gets a groundswell of the market, it does bring along others as well. And as sort of clarity around the sorts of opportunities grows, I would expect that others will get involved.
And Mark, from an advisor's perspective, what did you kind of make of them? Did it come as a surprise, or were you kind of expecting this?
I think we were largely expecting this, to be honest. It was sort of a bit of a matter of time. The breadcrumbs have been there for quite some time of how we want to unleash this DC power and invest it into the UK economy. I think it was really interesting there, listening to Tim. I was wondering, you know, Tim, you were saying there that you were, sorry, Amy, I'm going to take over your job here. Tim, you were saying that you were looking at diversification for a little while, and in particular these assets. I think it'd be really interesting to see of, you know, what your take on UK growth assets are. You know, how do you sort of define that? And do you think currently there's enough in the way of sort of high quality unlisted investment opportunities there available right now, or are we sort of in a bit of a holding pattern? Do we need to wait till sort of 2030? Is that more of a realistic time frame before we get to that 5%, I guess?
So You took over the job very well there, Mark, with lots and lots of questions. So let me see which ones I can sort of try and unpack a little bit. How do I define growth companies? I think it's a very broad phrase. Really what this is referring to is unlisted equities or businesses that are, you know, not on some of our registered markets. And what we've tended to see over time is there are various new ventures that start up that require capital support. We've seen them emerge across financial services sectors, across healthcare sectors, and there's also an increasing number and need actually for investment in areas around sort of renewable energy to grow out the scale of what is required there for net zero. So I think there always are opportunities out there. It does require sort of careful analysis and thinking around the nature of those opportunities and how you build them into a portfolio. But both in the UK and beyond, there's a continuum of entrepreneurs with ideas to try and capture future value from future opportunities. And I may or may not have answered all your questions, but
no,
think about most of them.
No, there's brilliant, Tim. I think you know what occurred to me, you know, when we start looking into this, and I tend to agree with everything you were saying there, is cost. For some of these assets, so it's going to be really interesting to see if we can have the superpower of DC works both ways. So whether we can do something on the costings, and I think the government consultation itself was showing actually it worked out quite nicely at half the current costs in their projections, and it'd be interesting to see if that actually comes to fruition, really.
I think so scale matters obviously for cost, as it does in many forms of many industries, to achieve sort of economies through these sorts of investments, just like any other investment, scale is important. So I think that's probably why you've seen the big players come first, and probably furthest ahead in thinking about this typically. There are increased costs in managing anything more actively than a pure passive portfolio, and the DC market has been dominated by passive investing for some time now. So what we were very interested in, very supportive of, was some of the work around the value for money framework that is also under consultation, where there's a recognition around promoting the need to optimize value, not just minimize cost, because without some room for people to choose investments that have slightly higher running costs on average, there will always be that pullback without that towards purely passive investing, which limits then what you can actually include in portfolios.
Yeah, and I completely agree. And it's biggest shock of this podcast might be that I'm quite a young person, so therefore I need that sort of risk taking. You know, very happy for me to be involved in that, because you know I've got the time to obviously see that through. And I'm not in the default fund either. And of course, that's what these are getting at the moment, is the default funds.
Yeah.
So it'll be really interesting. I think I've seen articles over the weekend that basically says, if you don't want this, pay more attention to your pension, which is a really interesting angle to go down. But I'm going to get told off by Amy. I'm going to run this podcast, Amy. Sorry, I'm going to let you jump in.
You're absolutely fine. You're used to the experts after all. But I did want to, you know, you were talking about costs and stuff. There were people kind of coming out and saying that there could be like potential risks to this, like, you know, channeling pension money into higher risk assets. Mark, maybe we could start with you about, you know, what are the risks that kind of come with this? Because I guess with anything, there's always good and bad.
Yeah, very wise to come to me. You know that I won't have follow-up questions that way, Amy. Well done. I think from my point of view, it's just making sure that people understand the risks. And I say that with a little bit of tongue in cheek, to be honest, because I don't know how many people in the default funds are looking at those wonderful pie slices that say this is how much is in equities and this much is in overseas investments anyway. But it is important that people understand where their pensions are invested. And we're seeing that more in regards to, say, the net zero and make my money matter. You know, we're getting a lot of traction in that. So people really need to understand actually where their pension money is being invested. And the risks aren't just like what we were saying before about in regards to returns and these companies potentially going out of business. It's in regards to where it's invested and if it's going into arms and all these sorts of sides of things that people are making conscious decisions to move away from. But if we don't communicate that effectively, then people could be very upset. So traditionally, that happens when they engage with their pension, which is pension access time, and it's too little too late.
Yeah, and Tim, what would you say? Because I think, you know, when this came on the news, you know, last week, you know, the people, the average Joe down the street might have gone, they're doing what with my pension? You know, I think sometimes people just go, because they can't, maybe don't understand or don't have all the information in front of them. There's like that sense of panic because I think the word pension already slopes fear into people. So what would you say to kind of them?
You can see how it could be read as someone's taking my pension money to do something with it. But obviously this is all in the bounds of highly regulated products, typically with independent trustees and others overseeing that things are managed appropriately and safely and in members' interest. So the whole industry safeguards are all still there around all of this, of course, which is important. In terms of the sort of, if you like, financial risk or monetary risk of returns, clearly if you were to invest in one particular specific initiative and it didn't work and you know, any sort of capital that was invested in it just sort of disappeared and lost value, that would be very high risk from a return point of view to a pension investor. This initiative gets to at least 5%, so 5% is a noticeable but, you know, modest portion of an overall fund's return. And of course, for large businesses like ourselves, we'd be sort of thinking about not necessarily just one single infrastructure project or something, but actually how do you create a portfolio? So you might have the ability to spread some of that risk across different initiatives, even within that kind of 5% share. So I think there's ways and means of looking at that and trying to establish access, but without it having that kind of extreme of risk. I think the final point, just pick up on Mark's point about, I think mentioned arms. I think one of the ways of interesting things for engaging people in their pensions is around the underlying sort of companies and projects that you may invest in. And of course, going off market gives you that opportunity to be a little bit more thematic and maybe select certain types of project that have got certain outcomes in mind. Again, I always go back to sort of our net zero pledges and, you know, renewable infrastructure and energy and those sorts of things that you know, maybe appeal to people, average pension scheme members, and may even make them a bit more engaged in their pension, which is a goal that we all aspire to.
And if I may, I think what's interesting about those comments, Tim, and I agree again, would be, although it's a small slice, you know, we're saying 5%, the messaging that went out was, well, this 5% is going to get you an extra £1,000, will get you an extra £1,000 a year in your retirement. So, you know, we can, you know, take that as, with a pinch of salt or as we may. I know that I will not get away with saying that on social media or anything else. But I think it'd be really interesting. Maybe it shows the power of investing. And again, you know, that how worthwhile it is to pay attention to your pension. And we're talking about a 5% slice, but it can make a difference of thousands of pounds throughout retirement. So that engagement can be really worthwhile.
Sure. And yeah, kind of looking at the, you know, the political landscape behind this, you know, we could in the next general election have a change of government. do you think the Labour will stick to these plans if they were to get into power? And, you know, could we see more focus on pensions? Because I think it's fair to say that they have kind of been left alone for a little while until, you know, the spring budget that we've just had. Could the, you know, this autumn statement that might be on the way in a couple, it will come around sooner than we think in November-ish time. Do you think, you know, there is going to be more focus on pensions now? Tim, maybe we can start with you.
Yeah, so I think the positive here is the focus on, you know, that pensions are important. It's a big industry of ours in the UK and really important to society. We know that you know, government's borrowing is higher than it has been post COVID, and the reality is that there's a real importance of the pensions industry to provide and sustain, you know, most of society as they sort of age towards retirement. So important that it's there. I think politically important that it will be thriving for whoever is in power. Wouldn't want to be predicting on future policy of different governments, but I do believe as part of the Mansion House work that the Lord Mayor of City of London did state that there was cross-party support to that initiative. So that would infer that there would be no sort of radical shift, no matter who is in power, which would be good, because I think one of the things that can hurt us is when there's sort of chopping and changing too much. So if there's a groundswell of consensus towards these sorts of initiatives, then hopefully we can make progress.
Yeah, I don't know if you had anything to add to that, Mark.
No, I agree. And I think Rachel Reeves already sort of floated some suggestions in and around the sort of 50 billion figure previously anyway. So that should give some confidence that's here to stay. I think the one that may be slightly different is away from DC. It might be more in the DB space, actually. And that'll be really important to see what comes out in that autumn statement. Like you say, Amy, that'll fly by. That'll be here before we know it. So I think that's the area to watch, actually, where we might have some changes, just like when LTA was abolished. In essence, Labour almost came out immediately and said, well, we're going to change that if we get into power. So that consistency is really, really key, as Tim was saying. But I think on the DC front, we can be pretty sure that we're on safe ground.
Sure. And just quickly to kind of finish us off, you know, last week was a bit of craziness in the pensions world. You know, it'd been quiet for a little bit and then it was like, here, have everything all at once. And there was the news that, you know, the small pots issue, that they kind of wanted to tackle it through consolidation rather than through the pot follows member approach. Tim, is this kind of a method that you think is better? Or I think small pots is so difficult to know what to do that will we ever get there, basically?
Yeah, there's a lot of practical considerations to sort of go through in the consultation. I think anything that makes it easier for a scheme member who may have had a variety of different pensions over the course of their life is a sort of a laudable aim. It's the right thing to try to do, so that they can understand their finances more easily and better, and therefore self-manage their own retirement much better. So the base concept and the aims of actually trying to make that more straightforward for people, absolutely important. A lot of practicalities to work through in terms of actually how you would put this in practice, the experience that a scheme member would go through at different stages when they move between employers. I think we've got a lot to work through there.
Yeah, definitely. And it seems that, you know, everything that kind of slots together, like the pension dashboards, would help small pots, and it's all being pushed back and it's all getting at different timings. I think it's so confusing. Yeah. And
the practicalities, I think Mark referred to some of the numbers that we heard recently, and how within sort of regulated disclosures, how tight they have to be. You could imagine in this sort of scenario with small pots, if you're moving between different schemes, what do you have to understand about any of the different features between those schemes, which may not be the obvious headlines, but, you know, there can be some quite subtle complexities. So you can imagine that's that's quite tricky to work through to make sure that that's fully understood when people are making choices.
Yeah. And Mark, so you kind of see lots of small pots and different pots coming through, and is it, you know, I guess it could be quite a struggle dealing with lots of different providers on your end.
It definitely can be, and you get different levels of service, different options, different terminology. I think there's tens of thousands. I think last time I listed it, 40,000 schemes in the UK, different schemes in the UK. So it's this enormous number. And we're going to see some natural consolidation in say, even in the master trust market. There was some announced today. But what I'm really pleased to see is actually we're just thinking about those people, we're using the word default, but the people who are actually pensions happening to them, these people that are changing jobs quite early in their career, they need a solution, really. They're sort of the people I'm speaking to saying, well, why doesn't it just happen automatically? So I think we're definitely along the right tracks. It's up to people on this call and listening to this podcast to think about the mechanisms and not too bothered about that side of things. That's for us to figure out, but they certainly like the practicalities of what it's trying to do. All I would say is that I think the current banding was classified as about £1,000 or lower. Or maybe that's phase one, and actually that moves in time a bit like dashboards. We're going to have different phases when that goes live. I think we have to do the same here with the small pots. And as for, you know, all the consultations that were released, I'm definitely not recovered yet, but it did remind me very much of myself at the dessert bar. I did want all the sprinkles, all the flakes, and two different types of desserts, if not three. So it was really pleasing to see it all actually come out. A bit of a time frame there, but it was very much had members at the heart and outcomes at the heart of them, and there was a bit of joined up thinking between them all, so I was actually encouraged to see them all come out.
Yeah, well, hopefully now we'll have summer to digest it all while everyone goes on their holidays and then come back fresh with God knows what else coming out. So we have to
all read lots of consultations on our holidays, can't we?
Yeah, exactly. That's what we've got to look forward to. Well, Tim, Mark, thank you so much for joining us this week. Tune in next week where we will discuss other goings-on in the industry.
Did you know the Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin? Through the words and experiences of investment professionals, you'll discover who was their best mentor, what's a mistake they made that changed their approach, and how do they find their next great idea? Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Published by American Funds Distributors, Inc.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.